afternoon, and who's watching, and who's watching. Hopefully, you are able to see us. I have been getting the message that my internet is a little unstable today. So hopefully, you'll be able to join us, or if you're watching it, hopefully it comes through replay. So you are watching Hashtag No Limits, and I'm your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people society has placed limits upon, but who have but through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we be. And I believe there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. And I 100% agree that we do know who we are at this moment, but we don't know what will happen in our next breath, in the next hour, and certainly not in 5 to 10 years from now. I have the great privilege of interviewing people who not only are busting through the limits, but people who are supporting them bust through those limits. And today, I'm very honored and very appreciative of my friend Nicolette joining me, because I reached out to her basically at the last minute and said, hey, I don't have a guest for today. Can you help me out? And she said, absolutely. She was glad to help. So we're going to talk about teachers and what's going on in our schools this year and for the last year and a half or so. So Nicolette, thank you for joining me and welcome.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. And I love talking and about teachers and supporting teachers. So it's been a whirlwind of a year. You know, a lot of things have happened this year. People are still recovering from the pandemic. And a lot of teachers who are teaching right now did not always have that teacher coaching, did not have that student teaching from last school year. So what's going on is they're being thrown into classrooms with not being able to know how classrooms actually run because they did their student teaching virtually, or student teaching was waived due to the pandemic last year. Or also too, there has been a lot of teachers retiring. And so that means they're trying to fill these gaps. So they were hiring teachers on the spot saying, hey, I want to hire you for this classroom. They get hired, and yet it's not what they thought it was going to be. It's completely different. There's behaviors. They don't know how to handle behaviors. They don't know how to handle a lot of things. And teachers are quitting because they feel stressed out more than normal. They're not getting the support. And people are just trying to fill the gaps and fill the holes.
Yeah. And you and I are both part of different teacher groups on Facebook, but we are seeing the same types of posts from teachers this year. And then plus with the group that you work with, you're the director of, and I'll let you talk about that in a second, of the teacher group that you have, that you lead. And so many people are saying, this is my first year. This is not what I expected. I thought that I would have more support. I thought I was going to have training. I read one yesterday that, or maybe it was the one that you shared, where it was a teacher has a psychology degree, doesn't have an education background at all, but the school that she wanted to work in needed a special education teacher. And so they did some sort of emergency waiver. And so now she's in a special education classroom. And while psychology is a good background to have going into any kind of education, it's exactly what you said. She has no idea how to run a classroom, but yet here she is. And she says, I don't know what to do. What, help me. I don't know how to write an IEP. I don't know how to make a schedule for special education. And it's just, that's happening all over the place. And that's not the only downfall of things that are happening. Not only is it that people are quitting, that they're overwhelmed, but we have shortages of paraprofessionals, shortages of bus drivers. Pretty much any position in the school, there seems to be shortages. I was working, I sub a lot. And in fact, this one particular school district, they were two or three staff members short when the school year started. So I've been there. I was there almost every day in the first quarter until they were able to get those positions filled. The other day I went in, and when I walked in, the principal was leaving the class because my schedule didn't allow me to get there at the exact moment that the teacher needed to leave. So the principal was filling in, And then at the end of the day, he was driving the bus. That's not his normal role.
Yeah. And I mean, that is seen all over the place. You know, there's administrators coming into the classroom and teaching, and they're like having to balance their administration duties and their meetings and everything else, plus be able to teach at the same time. And that's hard. We got a toll on everybody. You know, we're not just, you know, teaching in our classrooms now, we're dealing with the behaviors in the hallway. We're dealing with, you know, the transportation issues. We're trying to figure out how we're going to get all these kids serviced. And I know it's hard, and, you know, and this year has been hard because last year was hard. Last year, we kept on going and going and going, and there was no way for us to reflect and to recover and say, hey, how can we do this differently next time if this is still going on? There was no in-between plan. It was just like, we made it through this year. Well, let's breathe for a little bit and get ready for next year. And that's hard on everybody. It's hard on parents. It's hard on related service staff. It's hard on teachers. It's hard as if anyone who within the community and that we're partnering with our schools. So what I do is I support teachers. So there are some days when I'm in my Facebook group and I'm just like, I can't stand this anymore. And I'm like crying and getting upset because I'm also human too.
Right.
But then realizing, hey, what I'm learning and my personal experience could actually help other people be able to get their personal experience as well and be able to provide that support for those students who are struggling. We also got to realize, too, that a lot of the kids have been out of school for 2 or 3 years, and then trying to have them just be able to say, hey, sit down, let's do work. They didn't have to sit down for 2 years. They could do whatever they wanted to do. They could run around, and then trying to get them back into that normal routine is hard, especially for a brand new teacher, because all the tenure teachers, all the specialists are leaving the field because they're tired and they're burnt out.
Yeah. So how do you support the teachers? So first tell us about the organization that you have, and then kind of, you know, some of the problems that have come up in the, since you started it, and some of the things that you've helped them with support.
Well, the group is called Special Education Intensive Needs Teachers. I have a group on Facebook, and I also have a coaching community where I support and help teachers who are working with intensive needs students. And so I help them with basically breaking down the standards for their state, so being manageable chunks, help them with figuring out behavior management styles for their individual student, how to do the first and then cards if they're brand new. I also help them in regards to just having that confidence level. You know, every day is not going to look the same, but just going out there and having a great attitude gives the other students a great attitude. We can do this. Like, one of my models for my classroom is we can do hard things, you know, and it's been hard. And I remind my students that way too. We can do hard things, because every once in a while they're like, shout out, yes, Miss L, we can do hard things. We're going to add. Yes, we're going to add. We're going to multiply, you know, just forgive them their ideas and give them like confidence to keep on going. And it's great. Yeah, they might not get it correctly on the first try, but they're pushing through it. And I see it too with my group. It's not as much negativity in the group, because I kind of stop that. Like, if you're going to be negative, you can't be in here. You know, we're here to support each other and help each other grow, not to just to be negative in here, because there's so much negativity around our world. We don't need this extra group. We're trying to get support to be negative. So that's how I support them. I do help them with lesson planning. I help them with analyzing data and just being there to support them with their curriculum needs.
Yeah, and that's so true in the special ed groups that I've been in on Facebook. I can't control like you have the power to. So there is, I mean, it just seems like if one person starts negative talking about admin or their students or their students' parents, then so many people just pile on and, right. Oh yeah. And you know what? Oh, and I've, you know, this one and this one and this one. While it's important to vent our feelings, I'm not sure that a public forum like Facebook is really the best way to do it. But you know, again, maybe if that's the only source that they have, because, you know, special educators, we're our own breed and we understand each other a lot better than the gen ed teachers understand us, or we understand the gen ed teachers. There's those certain things that we're all struggling with as far as teaching. And so, you know, having the no matter what you teach category, but definitely having that person or those people that you can say, hey, you know what? I'm really struggling with this. Please help me. Versus that negative, you know, this is that.
Yeah. And sometimes the please help me is not an immediate fix. It's more of like, okay, what can I do now? What do you need now to be fixed right now to help you get through this day? And then what can we wrap around later on to help you? Right now, a lot of schools are promoting social emotional learning in their classrooms and being able for kids to self-regulate themselves and understand what self-regulation is. But just as teachers, we need that self-regulation too. You know, there are some days I walk in my classroom and I still have my cup of coffee. And I'm like, okay, guys, you know, you got to give Miss Lesniak 5 minutes. I need to be able to drink some coffee first. So take a break. Let's relax. Let's do some yoga for a minute. And then when we get all ready, we can begin doing our work. They need to be able to see those examples that we're doing, and we're not just constantly pushing through something just to get it done, but we're human. So they know that, okay, it's okay if you cry. It's okay if you get upset, but it's how you're going to respond to those situations that is going to help you. And that's what I really like about the Coaching Around You program that I'm doing for one-on-one teachers, is that I make sure that they're getting what they need. It doesn't have to be all academic. It doesn't have to be, you know, we're going to punch through this lesson plan, help you get it straight for your next evaluation. It's more of like, what do you need from me right now? How can I support you emotionally, physically, not always physically, but emotionally? how could I support you to get through this day? Do you just want to call me and vent? Then just call me and vent. It's easier to vent to a person on the phone than it is to be on Facebook, because next thing you know, you're getting blocked. You people are getting mad at you for venting or doing something that you don't think it was doing. For instance, I know that both of us know Catherine Whitaker, and she has the whole thing about not showing behavior plans on the wall, like red, blue, green, or whatever else. So a person did that a couple months ago, made a big post about it on Facebook, and everyone started backlashing her and backlashing, like, why you do that? Why you do that? And then what happened, she got upset, and I contacted her, so going, yeah, I know it's hard. I know you're trying to figure out how to do the behavior plan, but that's probably not a great way to just show students behavior in the classroom, because they're going to act out more if you're constantly putting them on red. And they see that. Let's figure out another way to track their behaviors if they're not earning something or something else. She goes, okay, thank you so much. I didn't understand that. I didn't get that. But again, it was a first-year teacher who is going by what was in a textbook that she read in college. And she did not have the experience of being in the classroom last year because she did everything virtually. So it's difficult this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, so let's talk a little bit about that behavior chart. So for anybody who is watching this, they might have one of those in their classroom, or they might know that their child has one in their classroom. So why is it bad? Why do teachers use it? What do they think it? And why do we recommend doing something else?
So teachers use it to help them visually look at who is being on task and who's not being on task. Okay. That's how they're using it. Okay. So when Johnny's being on task, Sue is not being on task. Let me move the little pen down. Students view it as, I'm being bad and I'm not getting off that color. I want to get off that color, you know? And so they act out more when they see their name constantly associated with a red or a yellow or whoever else you're doing it. And also, it's just not a good way to display like a student's behavior. You know, it takes away their self-esteem. You know, you don't know why they're acting that way. Their mom might've had a really bad day dropping them off at school. They might not have had breakfast that morning. You know, that's not being aware of the student's relationships and the way their feelings. As a teacher, I don't like doing that at all. Yes, I have behavior charts in my classroom, but they're not the yellow, the green, the blue, whatever else. They're behavior charts. So when the behaviorist comes in the classroom, she can just pull those things down, put them in her binder and walk back out the door, you know? So because they have like a FBA, I need to monitor certain things. But that's different than having it displayed in a red, a green, or a blue.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've noticed with teachers, and it's probably not really fair of to say this because I'm noticing this as an end sub. And so I'm only taking the student's viewpoint on how this happens. So I may be misrepresenting teachers, but my own experience in working every day with teachers, I saw basically the same thing is so often we catch students when they're not doing the wanted behaviors and we'll move them down on that chart. Mm-hmm. But we don't catch them doing the wanted behaviors and we don't move them up. And so oftentimes what happens is the kids will get on, you know, that lower level, whatever it is, however it's set up, whether it's colors or words or, you know, whatever. And then they just are stuck there. And like you said, they see themselves always, or like it's always that they're on that level below, this is where you're supposed to be. So often I've seen that to get moved up, kids almost have to be extraordinary. And so there's this, without even realizing it, assumption that everybody's going to follow all the rules all the time. And that's the expected behavior. And it's only we go above and beyond that, that you move up. And so when I've been in classroom subbing and they have disciplined somebody, and then they turn around and I haven't moved them down on the chart. And then they're doing the right thing, or I shouldn't even say the right thing. They're doing the wanted thing because there's a difference. Yes. So then I'll move them up, or, you know, I've moved the whole class up, or there's an online program called Class Dojo. Mm-hmm. And several of the schools in my area use that. And that's kind of the same concept, because a lot of teachers will just have it displayed on the smart board or the Promethean board or whatever, you know, electronic board they have in their classroom. And so every time a student gets a point or loses a point, it goes up on that board. And I've given whole classes points when I've been in those classrooms as the sub because I didn't have any discipline problems with anybody. And to me, that's going above the typical behaviors that I expect when I walk in as a sub, because I know subs aren't usually treated as well as the regular teacher.
Right.
And they just respond so dramatically. Like the next time I'm in that classroom, or the next, you know, depending on the day, if it's a class that rotates, the next time those kids are back, they want to get those positive points. So they are even more on their game.
Yeah, and everyone's interpretation of behavior is completely different. You know, mm-hmm. Some might walk in my classroom and say, hey, why is Johnny rolling on the floor? He's having a behavior. I'm like, no, he's not having a behavior. He's self-regulating himself. He just got through doing 5 tasks in a row and he's overdone and spent. He normally does 1. So he's not having a behavior. Or why is April or whatever sitting on the floor in the corner? She should be engaged in the classroom. Well, April said she wants to have a timeout, and that's what she chose to do. You know, so someone walking in doesn't always know what is going on when they see things going on in the classroom. Yeah, when you walk in, there's a chair flying. Yeah, duck and cover. You know?
quick reflex.
Right. But you know there's a problem there, but just someone that's stimming or someone that is off to the side or just, you know, sulking, you don't know what happened before that. So don't make assumptions when you walk in that room. And that's why I really don't like that whole behavior, you know, color system. When I refer back to that, I do have behavior charts in my classroom. It's because I have intervals. So for some students, I have to track the intervals of how many times they have done something. So how many times have a student eloped to go to the bathroom within a 15-minute period? And these are all monitored by our behavior specialist who comes in on a weekly basis to grab that data so she can report it back to the parents. So that's when it's easier for my team to have a, you know, a clipboard with a cover on it and just automatically tally and mark real once so that when a person comes in or my admin come in, all they have to do is pull that data and walk back out that door. Instead of saying, interrupting me and saying, hey, where's the data sheet or somewhere on your desk or where is it on your desk? You know, it's just so much easier. Come in, grab and go.
Right. Exactly. And tracking, yeah, tracking certain behaviors. So then, you know, the type of intervention
right
is very different than tracking whether somebody's lit or not, which is right. what, especially in the primary grades, which is mostly where these stoplight or these color charts are used. I honestly, I can't think of a classroom above third grade where I've seen the stoplight used. So, you know, we're using these with these little children, and exactly what you talked about, they get fixated on, oh, I'm on yellow, or, oh, I'm on green, you know, and then like so many classrooms before they go home, they have a weekly calendar and they have to color in what color they finished the day on. And then they take that home and then the parent knows, oh, they were on yellow or, oh, they were on green or pink or purple or whatever. You know, there's all different colors. Now I don't understand that exactly, but so, you know, even the parents know, oh, my kid was on purple today. That was awesome. They got bumped up twice.
Right.
Well, what did they do that got them bumped up twice? Or, you know, parents don't usually ask that question, but they do ask the question, well, why were you on yellow or why were you on orange or red or, you know, and so when I referred to the, when I said right, and then I said, no, I don't really mean right. I mean, what's wanted. One of our other master IEP coaches taught me to say wanted and unwanted behaviors. And for anybody who's watching and we forgot to say that, both of us are master IEP coaches. That's how we found each other and got to know each other. But that's what she talked about, was the fact that, you know, every person's viewpoint of a behavior is different, which you kind of just mentioned. So how I accept behaviors and how you accept behaviors is that understanding of a lot of those behaviors first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Everybody's tolerance level is different, and everybody's wanted behaviors are different, because in my classroom, I'm okay if, you know, kids are tapping their foot or tapping a pencil or, you know, tapping their desk with their hand. But in another classroom, that's strictly forbidden. So the students also need to know, if they're having different teachers throughout the day, what are the wanted behaviors in each teacher's classroom?
And that's sometimes teachers forget that. Not just general ed teachers, but special ed teachers, they automatically assume they're going to be perfect. And so what I always do, for I have a lot of kids who are included in other classrooms, and so I tell them, okay, we're about to go to math class. What is your goal for math? My goal for math is to listen and be quiet and do my work and get time to play the Wii at the end of the day. Okay, so that means in this classroom, we can't tap our foot. We can't run around the room. We need to sit quietly if we can. And if we can't get sit quietly and get the squiggles, ask for a pass to come see me. You know, so right. They have those three steps, and those steps are also on their chart. You know, stay quiet, do my work, raise my hand. If I need a break, go see Ms. Lesniak. So they have all that. I'm front loading them with that. And I also tell the teacher when I walk in there, here's the plan for today. So if he asks for a break or gets squiggly, you need to give him a pass to come see me. Otherwise, if you don't, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. And so we've been talking about the behavior charts for a little bit, and that was intentional. I wanted to explain some of that, but I do want to tie that back into the fact that so many teachers who never wanted to be special education are now in special education.
Yeah.
And they don't, I mean, all that we just talked about, that's huge. And that's still only, you know, maybe a small percentage of how you deal with your classroom and the classroom management. And we do, we've got all these teachers now, and not just in special education, but in the general education as well, that have been thrown in and they have no support. So I'm curious, and this is something that I've been thinking about, and I don't know the answer to, and I really honestly don't even have a solution, is how do we fix this?
Whew, that's a tough question.
See, that's why I don't have an answer.
You really have to have buy-in from the administration. You have to have buy-in from, some people say it's like a top-down approach. You got to make sure that everyone in your facility, everyone in your building knows what is going on. You know, everyone knows, like from the cafeteria worker all the way up to the superintendent, you know, they have to know about best practices in dealing with kids who are having behavioral issues, best practice for dealing with kids who are dealing with loss. Because a lot of kids have dealt with loss this year and it's acting out in so many different ways. And if you don't have that training in your school, if you don't have someone who's going to back you up, you need to reach out to your teacher friends and say, hey, can someone support me? Can someone help me? I'm struggling on this, you know, because we do learn best by learning from each other. And then really what I do too, I sometimes like, I say to my administrators, found this great resource. You want to look at it? And it's like, shoot them an email or here's a resource I found, or here's a book I found, you know, just so they know that they need some more input from this. Maybe we should change this. It's a slow process. Because I'm working on a major project at my school currently. And I'm like, yeah, we can do this in 2 weeks. It'll be great. We're going to get great. It'll be awesome. We can do this. We can do that. They're like, you got to slow down. You got to take it for baby steps. Not everyone is where you're at. Think of it as a brand new teacher trying to onboard. You know, so you really have to make sure you take it small chunks and then you get measurements from there. I'm like, oh, okay. And, you know, as you know me, Shelley, I'm not a person who likes to do things small. I like to get it done and get it done fast. So it's been really, really painful for me to step it back and take it little small chunks. So that's just not my personality. I just get it done.
Yeah. Well, and when there's the type of problem that we are facing right now, we do want to give it, I mean, not a quick fix, but we want a fix that's going to happen quickly.
Right.
Because we know that, you know, I mean, you're still in the trenches every day. And, you know, I've been out for several years. And so I only deal with this sort of stuff, you know, as a substitute. And so I'm not dealing with it anywhere near to the level that you and so many of my friends are dealing with it. And, you know, you said earlier, too, that last year, nothing really was fixed. It was just, okay, we'll try this. Okay, we'll try this. Okay, we'll try this. We'll do this for, you know, this quarter, and then we'll see if that goes. And we're still, unfortunately, in that space. And I think a lot of people were getting through last year thinking, I just have to make it to summer, and then hopefully next school year will be different. And so everybody sort of gave themselves that finish line.
Yeah.
But the finish line has been extended out. And so everybody's, I think, and there, so you tell me if this is correct or not. Everybody's exhausted because it's been such a long process.
Yeah. I mean, everyone is exhausted. Instead of having that fix, people are putting band-aids on top of band-aids. Sooner or later, those band-aids are going to rip. And the teachers who have been doing this the longest are ripping. They're like, hey, I can't do this anymore. Peace, I'm out, you know? And these are teachers who are a year away from their retirement, or they're a couple years away from the retirement. And they're just like, okay, can't do it anymore. Talking to some of my friends who are educators within colleges, and also who are doing the teacher leader program, or doing the teachers things within college. So the recruitment for teachers has been coming so low. You know, no one wants to be a teacher anymore. Wow. So that, what is that going to say 5 or 10 years down the road when another group of teachers get up and leave and retire? We're not going to have teachers, you know? So somehow, I think we get a think tank together or something for us educators who've been here a long time, figure out how we're going to fix this problem. And I know it's different for each individual state, but it's everywhere there's something going on.
Yeah. And I, you know, one of the other things that I think about too is we are hiring people to have bodies in the building. Is that really better for the students to just have a body in the building than have somebody who's qualified and who wants to be there. And can we afford the time to wait for the person who's qualified and wants to be there versus just putting that body in the building right now?
Right. Putting on my admin hat for a minute, putting bodies in the building gives the students services. And schools don't want to not give students services because then they would lose minutes and owe them compensatory services. So
right.
Sometimes they just, hey, we found someone to cover this one-on-one transportation from point A to point D. Here's the body. We got that done. Let's go on to the next one. We found someone, you know, so that they're trying to do it just for now. They know that, you know, this is not going to always be a perfect fit, but they don't want to be at end of the year owing all these services to families.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I understand. And, you know, again, going back to Catherine, she's, you know, she's talked to us about, we all understand that there are shortages, but that's not supposed to be the reason somebody isn't eligible for something.
Right.
You know, and that it does need to get documented in the IEP that, well, you know, the team has determined that a classroom aide or an individual aide or pull out services or push in services for this amount of minutes is necessary, but we don't have any to fill that need. And I struggle with, you know, I hear, because we both, well, at least I do, I work for parents too. And I hear so many parents saying, there's this person in my child's classroom and they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
They're not doing, you know, A, B, and C that my child needs. And so that's that whole struggle that I deal with of putting the body in the building or right. putting somebody who is qualified in there, because I get it from both perspectives, you know, that yes, having a person in there, because an alternative to not having that other body in there is that you get more work thrown on your schedule and all the other teachers in the building get more work thrown on their schedules. I'm hearing special ed teachers talk about their caseloads this year being 20s, 30s, 40s, 50 students.
Yeah.
And that isn't normal for a speech therapist. I've known speech therapists for years who have had 50 or higher kids on their caseloads because they would only see those kids, you know, 30 minutes a week and that would be it. But for a full-time in the classroom special education teacher in a building to have that many students and try to service all of those students and try to do all the paperwork for all of those students, I totally see why they're getting burned out.
Yeah. I mean,
overwhelmed.
Yeah. It's just also too, you got to realize that the majority of those numbers too are coming from the early middle school levels too. You know, these kids were out for a certain amount of time, 2 years approximately, doing virtual learning. And then all of a sudden, oh, wow, the kid's going to be 13, the kid's going to be 12. Well, they can't be in elementary anymore. Let me transfer them over to middle school. So we have these higher number of kids coming in the sixth grade without, or still are not having the skills they need to be able to do the sixth grade work. So that puts extra work onto the teacher as well. You got to meet standards, at least where I'm at. The teachers have to meet the standards. Everyone's measured by the standards. You got to meet those standards. So it's hard. And I know that it's hard. I mean, for example, in my classroom, I had a body just in my room. I took a week training them. Next thing I know, I get a phone call. Actually, I took a day training them. Next thing I know, I get a phone call. Oh, that person's no longer going to be in your room anymore. Oh, why? They didn't pass the background check. I'm like, okay, so wouldn't you think that you would have make sure they passed the background check before
right.
you put them in my classroom?
Yeah.
Or you needed a body. I understand that. I go, from this point forward, do not put anyone in my classroom until they go through that background check, because the kids make attachments. And,
right.
And it's hard. It really is. This year has been difficult, to say the least, for a lot of reasons. And there are some states, I know that you know this too, but there are some states who are getting rid of the alternative assessments. We're all kids, depending upon, no matter if you have intellectual disability or not, are being measured upon grade level standards. And that makes it even harder on some teachers because they don't know what to do because they've been teaching functional skills for the past 20 years. Like, right. Now I've got to have them, the kids, do algebra. My kids can barely do adding and subtracting, you know, and so being able to help teachers with that as well, it's been a big turnaround because everything relates to funding. And back on my admin hat again, we got to get those test scores up in order to get the funding in. So it's a lot of things. I just really pray and I'm hoping that everyone gives each person grace this year because this is not going away. We're going to be in this long call.
It certainly seemed that way, unfortunately. And yeah, the whole funding thing, I'm glad that you brought that up because I was just reading a letter to the editor from a school out in, I think it was Fairfax, Virginia. And a school has been given lots of emergency money. And like 40% of that was supposed to go toward helping education students get what they need. But what the school has chosen to do that money instead of directly helping with the services that the students are supposed to be getting is they're spending on COVID testing. And they're, I forget what the million amount was, like maybe it was 40 million, maybe it wasn't 40%. I think that's what it is actually. So I think it was 40 million. And they're spending hundreds of thousands a day on COVID testing. So very quickly, that money is going to disappear.
Right.
And there are the letter to the editor was from a parent of a child with a special need and saying, you know, my child's going into fourth grade, still reading first grade level, has been diagnosed with dyslexia. The school didn't have the funding that they were supposed to get, so they weren't able to help my child. We've taken a family hit and we're now sending her to a private school, but not everybody has that option. So I think the parent was advocating for school choice for special education students. They were, the research they had for how expensive schools were in Virginia was, I mean, it, for a, an elementary primary school was more expensive than my daughter's private college that she went to. So like, how's that even realistic? But yeah, the whole funding thing, when IDEA was put into place, it was that 40%, that's where my 40% was coming from, was supposed to be funded by the federal government. I got this 4 stuck in my head. I don't know. And it's never been fully funded at for even 40%. So I think somehow we need to work with our legislation too and legislators and get it fully funded so that at least the federal government's part of it is taken care of. It's still not going to take care of everything, but they keep requiring schools to do so much and promising money, but then the money never follows. But yet the schools still have to meet all the standards in order to get that money, supposedly.
Yeah.
But it, you know, so it's this horrible vicious cycle. And you know, I don't know how many parents are aware of that. You know, that our government is supposed to be providing stuff that they're not providing. So therefore our schools are having to find creative ways to provide what their students need.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, over the summer, I participated in a legislative group where we wrote educators and we spoke to educators and also legislative individuals asking for more funding. And most of them have said, I'm sorry, we're tapped out. It's not going to be fully funded. And and depending upon, and I know this might be depending upon what district you're in and depending upon what state and your test scores, you know, then you have more money. But if you're not that way, you're not always 100% fully funded. And it's hard.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
It's just like the classroom situation. Like I've asked, like one teacher asked me, like, how do you differentiate for the kids who are being in inclusion and kids who are out of inclusion? Like, well, I partner with the general education teachers. I get extra textbooks. I get this. I get that. I'm on them all the time to get that. And they're like, well, I'm doing the same thing. But they don't give me anything. I'm like going, well, you got to keep on trying. I know it's hard to say keep on trying, but you got to keep on trying, because if you're not consistent, they're not going to be able to give you those things. You know, I'm at right. my teacher's door all the time. I need that book, you know, and they finally go, okay, mm-hmm. here's the book. So, and I know it's hard.
Begrudgingly, like, here's the book.
Yeah.
They're like, fine, you can have it. Leave me alone.
Right.
But that's what, I mean, as a special education teacher, often what we have to do, because we don't have our own curriculum. We usually, because we only have maybe one or two students at a certain level in a particular classroom, our particular curriculum, they're not going to buy a whole curriculum. So we do have to beg, borrow, I don't want to say steal, but beg, borrow, barter, whatever, to get what we need for our students from the gen ed. Sometimes the gen ed doesn't have extra copies, because right. when ordered the curriculum, it only came with one teacher manual or 20 textbooks, and they already 22 students, you know. And so it's that's another thing that, you know, special education teachers have to deal with as well, is we are often, say this because I have hair, we're often the, you know, the redheaded stepchildren, as the saying.
Yes.
When it comes to getting stuff and yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. And you paused for a minute. I know if it was you or it was the
family. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. Yeah. And sometimes we have to, like, sometimes I would tell the students who were included, hey, hand me your math book real quick. I need to make some copies real quick. And so I go and make copies of their book, so I'd have something to, like, they teach in the classroom. And it is hard, depending upon what's going on in your classroom, how many levels you have in your classroom. I currently have 4 levels in my classroom. So it's difficult at times, but I'm glad that I have my group I can shout out to or ask for support, and they in turn ask me for support just to make it through. I'm counting down the days of Thanksgiving break right now, so that's good.
Yeah, my husband started teaching here. I don't know if you knew that, and he's teaching full time at a high school. And when I taught full time, I would bring stuff home single night and the weekends and go into my classroom on the weekends. And now that past the first quarter, he's gone into his classroom once or twice over a weekend, but he typically doesn't bring anything home with him. And my daughter was asking him, you know, well, how come you don't do your lesson plans mom used to? And he says, because 6 classes, I write 6 lesson plans. Mom had 6 classes, but she had 36 or 38 lesson plans to write because every single student did something different for each of the subjects that saw with me. And so coming up with all of that material and all of those ideas and get that stuff just always took me longer. And so that I'm thinking, my goodness, these special ed teachers who are having, you know, I don't know, 50 on their loads, where do they find the time to do anything but school? And is it fair for parents to expect them to do that? And is it fair for them to expect themselves to do that? What kind of things are you hearing from the parents of your students, or even what your teachers in your group are hearing their parents of their students?
Since I focus mainly on students with intensive needs, what I'm hearing from my group of parents and the group of teachers is that they want more functional life skills. They want more things for them to be able to help them later on in life. So what we've been doing is doing more things like ordering food out, cooking food, you know, doing things like that in regards to helping them for the near future. Like if the parent is working on spaghetti that month or that week, we make spaghetti in the classroom so the kid can go home and help and support their student. That's one mm-hmm. group of my kids. The other group of my kids are just trying to get them ready for high school. So yeah, they might not be ready academically for high school yet, but they're going into high school next year. So they want them exposed to the grade level content. So even though the kids might be having a behavior in class, if they don't want to do the work, the parents still want them exposed to that grade level content. They want them out more. They want them, you know, going out with their peers, not always in a self-contained setting. And so two different things, two different parents, and then you have those buffer parents in between. I just want my child to be happy at school. But can you give them homework too? Okay, you want them to be happy at school. You want them to do homework. But what else do you want? You know, they're in between parents. They're not actually saying, I need the support. They're actually saying, I do need the support. But they don't want to ruffle the feathers to make their child upset at school. So that's one thing. Another thing with some other teachers are experiencing is that teachers want it all and the parents want it all. And they want their child to be fixed. And as educators, we can't just go in and fix a child. That's, you know, they have to do the same thing at home as at school. If you're not being consistent, there is going to be a constant head button over and over again. So, for instance, I have one student who is allowed to do anything they want to do at home. Then when they come into school, they can't do that or do certain things, and the child becomes upset. So,
Yeah, and that's always an issue, whether you are a gen ed or a special ed teacher, you know, because parenting styles and teaching styles are not always in alignment with one another. And when they're very radically different, it does make it that much more difficult for us at school, I think.
Yes.
There's that. So what else is going on? We've covered a lot of stuff, but Why were you willing to come on? Was there something specific that you wanted to talk about that we haven't touched on yet?
No, I saw your posts and it looked like you needed some help. And so I'm like, okay, well, no, I have some free time. If you don't find anyone else, I can jump in, you know, just to help out a friend.
Yeah, because, you know, you're always bored and you have anything to do and you always have an extra hour in your day, just, you know, sit and chat with me. We've kind of talked about the group that you run, but we didn't really talk the kind of classroom that you have. And you missed a couple of times, well, I'm going to put my administrator hat on. So tell a little bit about what you do. Anybody who's watching Indiana, I'm in Illinois, so we do have differences as far as what is required by our state. Mm-hmm. As far as like standards and run our classrooms, things like that. But for the most part, they're very similar as they be anywhere in the country, I would think.
Yeah. So my classroom is called the Functional Skills Classroom. So students with an alternative assessment or students who are on alternative graduation plan are in my classroom. I also have a few students who are on the regular graduation plan. They're in my classroom. So I have a total of like between 9 and 10 students, depending upon the month, the quarter, and they're from nonverbal students all the way up to students who are verbal and students who also have behavioral issues at times. So my classroom looks different. There might be a group of students who are working on project-based learning, or they're working on, you know, those functional skills, identifying their address, identifying their name, going from one place to the other, you know, using a community map, shopping skills. Now there's a group of kids who are working on those speech issues, basically how to communicate, how to ask for wants, how to ask for needs, you know, being able to express themselves more, you know, while also helping with their education in regards to using the telephone, you calling your parents, you know, doing the other kind of stuff. Then I have other parents who, other student teachers who are not teachers, students who are included. That means they're going into the classrooms. They come back into my room. I modify the curriculum for them or make a comment to modifications and they go back out again. They come back for social emotional needs and they go back out again. And I have other group of students who are just on that buffer. They really don't want to be in my classroom, but they're in my classroom because they're academically, they're just not there yet to go out full time. And when they do go out full time, they have breakdowns because they don't understand the work. So as you could probably see from my conversation, I have resource in my classroom. I have a special ed self-contained setting. I have a functional skills classroom. And then just being able to manage all that sometimes is challenging. But then also, too, I'm the inclusion rep for the district. So I make sure that the kids are actually being fully included. And inclusion to me is, I tell everyone, inclusion is not 15 minutes in a classroom. Inclusion is not just being in a gym class or an art class or sitting in the cafeteria. That's not inclusion. Inclusion is actually being in an academic core classroom and having concepts broken down to them at their independent level and then being reinforced later on with a resource setting. So I'm dealing with that. So for instance, there was a kid who just added to my caseload who is in inclusion, and he's been having a lot of behaviors at the beginning of the school year and everything else. I went to the student and said, hey, here is your chart for today. What are we going to do? He told me what we're going to do. There was no behaviors at all that whole day. I did not see him roaming around the school. I did not see him laying on the floor. It was just like I set those expectations. And just because a kid is in a self-contained setting or in a resource class or in a PASS program, which is our behavior program, does not mean that we should not give them limitations. Everyone needs some sort of limitations every once in a while. I need limitations every once in a while. My husband just told me, hey, get off the phone, turn off your computer. You know, you got to stop, yeah. You know. And I know it looks different in how we explain things from state to state, but we're all here to support all learners and each and every learner. And just think of if every single teacher had the skills that we have as special education teachers to break down concepts. And that's what I really love about supporting my teachers and supporting the people in my building.
Yeah. And I honestly, when I left teaching, I wanted to only work with the parents because I had a lot of bad experiences with education in general, not all gen ed teachers, but there were, you know, mostly because there was, I only was able to ever work with a few other special education teachers in all my districts where I worked. They were very small districts. And I was usually either the only special ed teacher in the building or in the whole district, or I was maybe one of two. And so most of my experiences were with the gen ed teachers, and I was very frustrated with them throughout a lot of my teaching career and for a couple of years after getting out of teaching until it finally registered with me how little training our gen ed teachers actually receive when it comes to working with our kids who have an IEP.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh my goodness, you know, and even as I've done this now, like tomorrow, I'm doing a presentation for about 20 or 25 teachers, and some of them are special ed and some of them are regular ed, about the IEP, what all the pages are, how we fill them out, what do they look like, why do we do it the way we do it, why do we, you know, and then I'm going to go into a lot of the stuff that I have learned from Catherine that I never really thought about before. But there are so many teachers that they just, I mean, the amount of training, one or two classes out of their entire college career that are talking about special education, if there's somebody going into general education.
Yeah.
And we have to do better for them because in turn, that will be better for our students. So like you talked about, you know, the behaviors, that poor teacher may or may not understand what needs to be done for that student.
Right.
And especially all these teachers that we're getting now that either had virtual student teaching or no student teaching, have had no classroom experience. My husband, and I'm going to pat myself on the back here. I'm trying not to break my arm doing so, but my husband had the experience of having me for, you know, 29 married years before he went into a classroom. But prior to, he'd never been in a classroom. He was in the business world. So, you know, he had heard and he and I had talked about classroom discipline throughout my entire career. So he had an idea, but there are a lot of people who don't have the benefit of a spouse being a teacher that are now going into these classrooms and they have no idea.
Right. And it's not just the general ed teachers, it's the special ed teachers too. You know, if you've been a resource teacher for the majority of your life, and all of a sudden you're being switched over to self-contained or functional skills class or behavior class, you're like, what do I do? You know, because those kids, it's different being a resource teacher than being a behavioral specialist teacher or than being a functional skills teacher. It's completely different. Yeah, we all have the umbrella of being a special ed teacher, but sometimes we just got to stick with what we know and what we're good at. Right. And I know that right now there is shorts everywhere and they're just trying to fill holes, but there has to be some sort of way that administration or people who are hiring teachers are saying, hey, here's how this classroom is, you know, not to say, oh yeah, you're going to just work with the functional skills kids. It'll be okay. Or you only have 5 or 6 kids in your classroom. You'll be fine. It'll be great. But that 5 or 6 is a double amount of kids. You might have 5 kids, or 6 kids, but actually it's like 12 because you got to put on all their behaviors, all everything else that's going on in their classroom, where they're at academically. And some teachers were not aware of this and they were upset, very upset.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree that our universities need to do a better job of educating our incoming teachers, our outgoing, there, however you look at that. And our administration and our school districts need to do a better job of supporting the new teachers. But actually, do you think, and this will be the last question and then we'll wrap up, do you think that if the administration was going around and saying, I hear you, I know this is tough, and just doing a little bit of that sort of thing, do you think that would help?
Yeah, I think it would. If it was just, you know, just saying, hey, I see you're struggling. I see that you need some additional help. What can I do to help you? You know, what could we do to support you? That goes a mile, you know, because, you know, you can see it. They're like, hey, well, thanks. Well, thanks. I didn't see that you saw it. I mean, you know, it gives a uplift of spirit instead of always saying you're not doing this, you're not doing this, you're not doing this. Oh, yeah. And by the way, lesson plans aren't turned in, you know, so that doesn't help. It just adds more stress onto teachers' plates and they become easily annoyed and frustrated. And they say, okay, forget it. I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I so agree with that. And like you said, you know, to be able to give grace both, you know, or well, it's not just both, it's from administration to teachers, teachers to administration, teacher to teacher, teacher to parent, parent to teacher, teacher to student. I mean, grace has to, I think, be like everybody's word for the rest of this school year. And hopefully that will help everybody get through it. But thank you so much for agreeing to be on and to chat with me about these things. I do know that your time is very valuable and very precious, and I appreciate you giving me an hour of it to do this. Take care. Tell the hubs hi, and I will talk to you again sometime.
All right. Bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.